lost
connection to the
just to the stream though. There we go. Okay, it's back.
You back?
It was not my PC though. This morning, first thing, I changed out my sound card. I think that was the problem. That was an internet issue, and that sucks. So, all right. My computer hates IAM. Okay, this guy, boom. It should be back up though. So go. All right, so let's talk a little bit about StarCraft II event. Who, Pain User, impressed you the most at the IEM World Championship?
Oh, man. Probably MC, dude, to be honest. I mean, Puma was super... Well, okay, there's three players. MC, Puma, and Feast. You know, Feast just playing ridiculous, taking names all tournament, you know, gets to the third place match. Excellent games. And, you know, MMA 3-0s him, but hey, he put in his work, turned a lot of heads, had some great games. MC just looked phenomenal throughout the whole tournament. I mean, he was destroying everybody.
Yeah.
If you look, pull up the bracket, I mean, 3-0 Violet, 3-1 Feast. And then in the finals against Puma, those were some of the coolest games I've seen in a really long time. I really, really enjoyed the finals between MC and Puma. Those were just insane games.
Going all the way, too, which is equally impressive. But MC,
indeed.
That man looks so happy when he won, man. Like, he wants it, Pain User. You mentioned a little bit earlier that, you know, the way that MC carries himself is not necessarily something that you dig. But
ever since I saw him flip off Greg at that MLG, like, because I was all stoked for that match, and I was sitting right front stage, and, you know, MC just walked right up to Greg in the crowd and just gave him the full-on, just dunked the middle finger right in his face. And, like, there's just something about the way he carries himself physically that's, like, very, I don't know, he's like an intimidating nerd, but he's not. So it's like, I don't know. I feel like he would get on a lot of players' nerves, like, with celebrations and stuff, and, like, just, I don't know. I don't think I would be too thrilled with one of his celebrations.
I asked you this earlier. I said we should keep it for the show. Don't we kind of need that a little bit?
I mean, yeah, but I mean, at this point, we have so many, like, you know, like, bad boy personas and, you know, BMing players, okay, and just, like, all kinds of different personalities.
But,
you know
we also, like, have the, like, sweet and,
Chef,
you know, we have
the one.
I mean, yeah, we have. No, I mean, when you think about, like, the Koreans, you know, well, I guess except for the Kamehameha, we haven't seen, you know, MMA sort of comes to mind, like a Leenok, you know, an MKP who's, like, not only could not be BM, but, you know, doesn't know when he wins competition. So Kent doesn't even know when it's time to be BM. So I think we have both sides of the spectrum.
For sure. I don't know. Just something about him.
I don't know that there's necessarily any players that rub me that way.
It was like Firebat Hero for me, okay, in Brood War. Like, just something about Firebat Hero just rubs me the wrong way. I don't know. Like, he's that guy that everybody loves to hate and they love him for it, but I just don't have the love. Like, it's
right. You have the hate. You know?
Yeah,
that's okay.
I don't hate anybody, but
right,
it's just like,
it's, right.
I feel at that level of competition, you put in so much time and you have so much respect for one another that when you, like, trounce someone in a best of five on stage and you make it a point, not necessarily to humiliate them, because I don't think that that's, like, MC's intent, but to get really silly and kind of, like, rub it in their face and hype the crowd around it is one thing. But I feel like at the end of the day, if you look at, like, a boxer or a Nada, guys that are just absolute legends in this sport, they will do a respectful bow, and they have nothing but respect for their opponents. They'll go in, shake their hands. I mean, it's like a different – it seems like a different thing when I watch
them.
They
come from Brood War, though. Like, doesn't that automatically –
Don't we all, though? Like, I mean, MC, I'm sure, grew up watching.
Yeah, but not, like, yeah, but I mean, look at the environment that they grew up in, where it was like – I mean –
But I don't think that the way you celebrate a game is necessarily doesn't pertain to the game that you play. It's more about like who you are and what you're about, I feel.
Sure. Okay. I mean, I dig that. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, I obviously respect is number one. And it was kind of funny because I remember during IEM, you know, of course, there's been an ongoing IDRA cast, like, I don't know, you want to say rivalry or whatever, but Kaz has bested IDRA like many, many times, like I think the last four games. And
yeah, he's got his number.
On stream, I think we were watching like JYP, I think it was, when was it? Yeah, JYP versus Elfie, or maybe even JYP versus Puma. And in the background, you could see like IDRA and Kaz talking, and people were like, dude, they are they friends? Like, did they make up? And it's like, well, dude, that's just how it always is.
Well, also, I'm sure, you know, Idris is an intelligent guy. This guy's got his number. He keeps kicking his ass. I wouldn't put it past Idris to go up to him and be like, hey, you know, like, are there any timings in TVZ that I'm not hitting versus you? Like, you know, what am I doing wrong? Am I taking my third tour? You know, he could talk. You can talk to people that you feel like are better than you, and honestly, sometimes they will say just one thing that completely opens your mind about either playing them specifically or the matchup in general. Like, I've asked people that will whoop my ass in TVZ on a consistent basis, and I'll sit down with them and I'll be like, look, like, help me figure out what I'm doing wrong here, because I'm not beating you, and it's bothering me, and I want to figure out how, and then you can kind of, like, work it out together. So, you know, who knows, maybe that had something to do with it.
By the way, Lizalfo wanted to come into chat and make sure that we knew. They said, quote, LOL, they don't even know MC was in NBC Game Hero. So,
just... Yeah, he played Brood War as well. That's what I was going to say. And yeah, we did know that, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, well, but we're both dumb fucks for not, apparently. So other good matches throughout the competition... I mean, honestly, everything that was in – actually, was it the round of 16 went by so fast? Like, it was just – I mean, we had two PvPs in there. But, like, Killer Hasuabs was just, like, done. And then even the round of, or the quarterfinals, like, it almost took him to the semifinals before we were really starting to see, you know, like, the solid games. I think most mm-hmm. of the good stuff we saw was in the groups.
Yeah, there was some. Group B was just PvPvP.
The PvP group of death. Yeah.
And then there were a lot of PvPs outside of the group stages as well. Like, there were quite
a few. That were featured.
Yes.
Too, yeah. Yeah. What'd you think of Grubby's casting?
Grubby's always solid, dude. I've heard him cast on his stream as well, where it's just, I really like the way that he explains the game. And that's something that's really important for me. When I'm listening to another caster, I feel that there's a lot of casters out there who either understand the game or they study the game a lot. Maybe they're not the best player in the world, but they put in a lot of time. They watch a lot of replays and they really, really study the game. They know a lot about stats, but for a really good player who can vocalize the game in a way that makes sense to you, right, that's what's really important to me. If I'm like, if he's casting it, I'm like, oh, that's a cool way to think about it. I never really thought about it like that. Like, that makes a lot of sense. Anybody who kind of makes you have those little, like, those little realizations during their cast, that's what I really like. And I feel like his style does that pretty well for me.
I was looking through the other. I was looking through the other matches as well, which, by the way, I think, I mean, if you've never tuned into Grubby's stream, is really good. He is really, in my opinion, starting to show what I would even go so far as to say his Warcraft 3-ness and Starcraft 2. He has been doing some just stupidly ridiculous stuff with Warp Prism drops and, like, Blink Stalker harass that is just like...
Oh, yeah.
It's really – his control is just – it's really amazing.
I mean, that's all Warcraft 3 was, right?
It
was,
right, I mean, exactly,
that's all it was. But, like, those guys have insane control. Like,
yeah, Yeah. I mean, literally, he just like has been grinding out on his stream and like trying to like figure out and master like where does this work, where does it not. You know, oh shit, they're just counterattacking. Like, he's been doing it so far that, you know, he's been like putting up secret expansions just in case the base race would come up. I mean, it's like really, it's really solid. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, him continue to improve, because I think he's really great. Yeah. Violet continues to do really well, dude. Like, I mean, just so impressive. I was a little bit, I mean, it was hard to get out of the groups, period. So obviously White Raw, Grubby not getting out, even a Damaga. Idro is obviously a disappointment. Real, and even Kaz. So especially,
how do we do on our predictions from last show?
I don't know that we did. A lot of us were saying MMA, but
yeah, we did the top three in every group though, right?
Actually, I think we did.
Right? Yeah, we definitely did.
I think we nailed Group A.
Indeed.
I think Group B might have been.
We thought White Raw was going to go through.
Yeah.
And we thought MC was going to go through. And I think the third slot was kind of up for debate.
Yep, I agree. And then I think that in Group C, we definitely said Puma and Killer.
Yeah, Puma, Killer, and Mana, I think.
Yeah. But Xenia makes it out. And then I think we actually might have said Real, Feast, and Supernova? I'm not sure.
No, I think we gave Idra a little bit more credit than that. I think most of us threw Idra in there for Group D, but said that it was a real possibility that he could get upset.
No, sorry, Greg.
Yeah.
Rough
comp. He did not look happy.
Rough competition.
Right.
Right. All right. Yeah, I mean, again, I look forward to another great year from IEM.
Yo, but
what?
While we're on IEM, man, some of the strategies that were used throughout
the
tournament.
Yes, that's where I wanted to go next. What do you think? What was like?
I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff going on, but I mean, I was jotting down notes while watching it, and some of the stuff that really stuck out to me was Puma kind of using the tank style after a quick expand. So he was actually using siege tanks like defensively to grab his third and dropping at the same time, which is something we really don't see that often. We've seen players use like tank Banshee builds in the mid game after an expand. So like it's like the one racks into quick command center into quick fast two gas, and then he gets a factory and a port. But it was really cool to see him use sort of like a defensive siege tank style while dropping at the same time. And he actually took a couple wins off MC with some really sweet drops. And then like, did you ever see how Puma kept relocating his factory at the entrance to his bases?
Yeah.
That happened three times throughout the finals where he landed a factory right in front of MC's entire army as he was trying to push his way through. Like, just that. The timing there is
force
ridiculous.
Field, dude. Terran force field.
Right?
Yeah, and I mean,
he's starting to use it now, like,
and
effectively.
It's funny, right? Because when we talked about the factory landing that MKP did versus DRG at MLG, we kind of brushed it off as, like, cute thing. You know, happen. And I think people have said, well, you know, shit, I'm going to use this guy scouting anyway. And was doing some good stuff with that. So, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I thought that was absolutely amazing. And then his little super quick elevator strategy on Antigua Shipyard where he rushed for the four Hellions as fast as possible, and then he just immediately dropped them over his cliff and then ran them in to MC's front and cut off, like, the whole, you know, travel time. Like, if he had sent the medevac with the four Hellions in it, it would have taken so much longer to get to MC's base. But instead, he just ferried them right over and then ran them, which is probably, like, 20 seconds faster than an actual Hellion drop, and that worked out pretty well. He ended up losing that game, I think, but
There was actually awesome. Quite a few games, Pain User, where I thought one player was going to win, and you know, all of a sudden it was. In fact, there was a couple games with MMA where I was like, oh, wow, you know, someone got, and then all of a sudden he's just like beast mode, stutter-stepping like a boss with his M&M, and just, you know, like, it suddenly he wins.
I totally agree with that sentiment. There were multiple points throughout the tournament where I was like, oh, Puma's done. Oh, MC's done. Oh, MMA is done. And then it's like, what? Huge comebacks.
Yeah, huge
across
comebacks.
The board.
So,
and then, did you see MC's little cannon rush against Feast?
Yes, yes.
On Daybreak?
Actually, we saw two cannon rushes that weekend. So, but yeah, talk about it a little bit.
I mean, that's just like checkmate within the first 4 minutes. I mean, I don't know. What's your take on that as a spectator? Because as a cat, like, as a player and a spectator, I feel like, A, I've been robbed of a potentially awesome game. B, I'm not getting to see either of these players' true skill sets whatsoever.
Because as we continue to get further and further into the competitive atmosphere and you know, just, I think, philosophy of these competitions, right? Like, you know a player's strengths and weaknesses and everything in between in their early, mid, and late game. You've studied this player. Maybe mm-hmm. you've played him, you know, so many times. And I truly feel that over the past 2 months, Pain User, we've been seeing more and more of these types of strategies just slipped in there. Just kind of like, hey, let me just give you a little kiss. It'll be all good. It's not her, you know, and it's working. I don't think we would be seeing it as much if it wasn't working. But going so far as like, you know, first it is, let's call it what it is, you know, some cheese, a cannon rush, an early pool. In fact, the Zergs have been going early pool crazy against themselves, against other races when they can, mm-hmm. not so much the Terrans, et cetera. The proxy stuff, we saw a couple proxy gates, a couple proxy void rays as well.
Proxy Raxes too.
Exactly. So I think it's – you're right. You know, what would we rather see?
I'm okay with some of the cheeses though. Like some of the cheeses you're describing, the proxy gates, the proxy Raxes. Like sure, it's going to be a quick game. But you're going to get to watch those two players micro the living crap out of three or four units, and it's pretty exciting, right? Like, that's actually kind of exciting. But when you have, like, an impenetrable wall of buildings and a cannon in the mineral line in range of the Nexus within the first 3 minutes and 50 seconds of the game, it's like, checkmate, haha, because you didn't have the mental, like, you didn't know that I was going to cannon rush you, and you didn't put a probe there preemptively to block my pylon.
Then what happens? Like, dude, have you been seeing the probe activity and the zergling activity of players these days? Like, I shit you not. Like, they now are like, I will uncover all of the fog of war.
Oh, for sure.
You know, that again, is something that evolves.
He put the pylons up in vision range of his Nexus. Like,
how about that? Well, okay, let's talk about something that's kind of along this line. But this tournament, my absolute favorite things that I saw go down were some of the harassment between Zerg and Protoss, and some of the cannon harassment by the Protoss against Zergs, like shutting down two expansions at once, or the Zerg trying to save one. I mean, we saw some really, really remarkable stuff as far as that's concerned. And I feel like that in itself is becoming one phase of the game where a mistake on either side can totally wreck a Protoss when suddenly the Lings are, you know, knocking at his front door, or completely wreck a Zerg when two expansions are locked down and then a couple cannons go down. Like, some people really don't like it. I'm a big fan. Big, big fan. Hate when it happens to me, Pain User. But watching the player react, just like you said, how many drones does he pull? How's he going to react to this? Is he going to wait till he gets his Zerglings out? Is he going to cancel it? Is he going to put it over here? Is he going to build his hatchery in his opponent's natural and then try to,
and
Evo Chamber block him?
And that being said, like, watching an excellent player deal with cheese like that is so interesting, because like the MMAs, the MVPs, the Nestees, when they deal with cheese like that, they just absolutely shut it down from time to time. Are you putting Mini to bed?
No, turn the light on, Mini Wheat. Turn the light on. It's getting a little dark. It's starting to.
I love watching the truly great players handle those types of cheeses, because sometimes they just absolutely shut it down. And they have, like what you're saying, the number of drones to pull, how many lings you're going to go with. They have that all down to a science. And watching them shut down cheese is awesome. Whereas with players like just under that level, it kind of gets into this like hectic push and pull situation where whoever comes out on top, micro is going to win.
Yeah. And I mean, there's still some situations that we've seen, Pain User, where even though we see a player play their heart out, they're so far behind that there's just nothing. Typically, that happens in a lot of the TVZ openings where the Terran just gets, you know, one too many kills or one too many Zerglings are made. It's game over. But I still think it's great to see. So to go back to your original question, I truly believe that it's a necessary part of competition, having these types of games and seeing this. I'm okay with it.
But, like, can you draw a parallel between that and anything in a real competitive sport?
No, but can't you draw a parallel between that and Brood War? Because it certainly happened.
Yeah, it certainly did.
You know, absolutely. I mean...
Well, I guess, like, in MMA, like, a guy walks out and just gets head kicked in the first 10
right.
seconds or something like that.
I mean,
that.
It's like, I don't know that you can compare. It's just like... okay, how about this?
Like part of the game that you I have mean, to deal with.
If you
I
compare
guess.
It to chess, there is an opener in chess where you can move a pawn, move a bishop, move a queen. And unless your opponent moves a pawn in front of their king, I think, it's an automatic checkmate, right? Anyone who's never played chess, you will beat them with that until they learn how to defend it. Now, now, once you know how to defend it, at that point, it's completely negated. So, I mean, that's the closest parallel that I think I could draw to something like that. In a real sport, no. Unless it's like a Hail Mary, but even then, I don't...
I mean, yeah, but let's look at this objectively. Like, in order to actually stop a cannon rush like that, like, A, you need to know it's coming. B, you need to know the specific type of cannon rush and where it's going to go. And C, you have to preemptively pull your own mining units just to block that space. Like, what are the odds that you're going to prevent that from happening? Like, I mean, it's doable, but I don't know. I feel like those specific things, and it seems like it's something so easy for Blizzard to be like, hey, look at all these cheesers cannon rushing everybody on ladder and just like owning them. It's like, oh, make it so that they can't make cannons within X amount of feet of the command center or the hatchery. Like, I don't know. Maybe something like that. Or, oh, you have to put your pylon within a certain range of the Nexus. You can't put pylons in your opponent's base, like, within the first 5 minutes. I know no Protoss players would be okay with this, but I think it would be interesting.
We better back off a little bit, Pages, because people are talking about changing the Forge build time, man. It's getting out of control in there. Be like, what? You could single-handedly crush our Protoss brethren if you did that.
But, yeah, like... All in all, the strats throughout the whole tournament were amazing, and I think we saw a lot less of what I would consider standard games at IEM. Like, there was all kinds of just crazy, crazy situations. Base trade situations, all-in drops, I mean, and a lot of two-base on two-base action. I mean, most of the games were either two-base
on two-base
action. Right?
Yeah. No, it's not just because there was a lot of Protoss featured on the stream. A lot of it was like everyone had their finger on the trigger this whole weekend, just like waiting to fire. Even in the TVTs, we saw like super ultra aggression. But we also saw some pretty amazing base races as a result of this aggression, which also seems to be something that is showing its face more and more. And that's the one thing I want to talk about, because I watched this interesting debate unfold in chat as much as it could. It was in the premium chat, so it was pretty, you know, under control. But they were talking about, you know, like, do you like base races or do you not? And, you know, there were a whole argument made about, you know, every once in a while we see these base races where it literally just comes down to either tech that can win flat out, you know, putting out DTs and not having an observer, or it turns into mobility and, you know, being able to protect your last building.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't happen that often, but it turns into such an interesting
Absolutely, because it's like the best way I could describe it in those situations in games, it's like both players are like three moves away from checkmate, but they don't know what the right moves are to make checkmate happen. So they're like trying to scout each other. It's like, oh, he has one observer left. If I kill that, he has no more detection. And watching them figure it out, and like whoever gets to the conclusion right first more oftentimes wins. And a lot of it comes down to experience in base trade situations, to be honest. Like, it's all experience. It's like, oh, I've been here before. I've had a cloaked Banshee when he only has one detector left.
Exactly, dude. This kind of goes off topic of IEM, but going back to Grubby, I was watching his stream today, and a part of this whole Blink Stalker Warp Prism harass is that he accepts that I may have to base race, right? When this happened, he was ready. He put up the tech that he needed, but it was like just enough tech. It was kind of like, I know I'm not going to rebuild myself, but what I am going to do down is put two gates and my DT. And he had a preemptive like Twilight Council sort of off. And that ended up winning the game because he targeted down the he targeted down the Robo. There were no more observers. But it was sort of like, now players are thinking about the way this game is going could end up in that scenario. What am I going to do about that? Mm-hmm. Whether that be going crazy and planting cannons all over if you're a Protoss and you know, like, well, I'm not going to get a fourth base, so let me protect my third to the point where the Mutas cannot actually win this mm-hmm. battle, to hiding tech all over the place. I think
that was not my swallow pipe.
Went down the
that's road. The wrong one.
So it's very peculiar that this is becoming something new to the game. I'm okay with it. Peculiar in a good way.
I agree. And I really like watching this.
Tense is a good word. All right. Anything else you want to say about IEM? I think we might open the phone lines for a bit. What do you think about that?
I'm preventing myself from choking to death at the moment.
Just, yep. We'll open the phone lines. Let's see.
But yeah, IEM, all in all, was great. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Interesting. I was just reading something on Reddit, and I was like, apparently this is – okay, whatever. All right, I'm going to open up the phone lines, dude.
All right.
Let's do it. You can give us a call, DJ Wheat, or telephone 909-581-8519. We already got our first caller trying to get in. Let's bring on – we got Zizba. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. Zizba.
Hello.
How are you?
Second, I cut stream.
No problem.
Okay. I'm very glad you get me. I'm very sorry about my English.
That's okay.
I can understand you fine.
Yes.
Cool. So, I was wondering, what do you think about Puma play versus MC in the final of AEM? He looked very stressed, and two times he gets the chance to win, and did.
Yeah, there were a couple of missed opportunities there by Puma, and I think I saw a couple of people talking about it earlier in chat that Puma is. The way that he opens and the way that he like forces you to try to figure out exactly what he's doing without showing everything, that MC was almost locking that down to the point of is that you're not going to get away with anything that that I'm not expecting. And that I think that actually caught Puma off guard a little bit, where mm-hmm. A medevac gets lost that shouldn't have got lost, or unfortunately was like out of position. Was there a specific example, Zizba, that you were thinking about?
Yes, MC got so aggressive when he was behind. It was silly. I think he blows the mind of Puma, and Puma did so big medivac, so much medivac. And,
which game are you talking about? The one on Entombed Valley?
One on Antigua.
Oh, on Antigua.
Yeah. And Entombed Valley too, he did so many medivac. It was silly.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. And I think that that's like part of Puma's style. He's very, very dependent on medevac harass, and he likes to get his medevacs out really early on in the game. But I feel like if the game continues to go on and he doesn't do very much damage with his medevac harass, that he kind of ends up with a huge surplus of medevacs in a lot of his games. You know, he'll have like 8 to 10 medevacs or something like that. But that's so expensive. Like, if you think of the cost there, and you're not really using those medevacs to drop at that point in the game. And yes, the healing is really nice, but I think you can invest your supply and your money like in upgrades and more infrastructure and stuff like that. And in the game on Entombed Valley, where Puma, I thought he was going to win after he held off MC's like 3-gate pressure at the front door. Mm-hmm. And then he pushed all the way across the map, and he ended up losing everything at MC's front door. And I think he just got too caught up, like you said. He's like stressed. Like, he got too caught up in the moment and thought that he was going to win right there, but he didn't know that MC had a third. And MC just spent literally all of his chrono boosts off of three Nexus barely, on his gateways for
MC held very barely and crush every army. Reprod fast. Very impressive.
Yeah, man, I agree. Like, it was tough to watch as a Terran player because I felt like Puma had an upper hand in a lot of those games and a lot of situations where he made some pretty big mistakes that he doesn't usually make, especially against Protoss.
I think really vs MC, because MC make people do a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think MC's just super solid.
He does, and I don't think much phases him, to be honest. You know, like, I've never seen him, you know, like, super crushed after a defeat, or, you know, it's that persona that he has. It's just who he is. So, all right, Zizba, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye. I love you. Keep going. Bye-bye.
All right, let's take another call here. We got Milo on the line. Milo, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Milo.
Oh, hello?
Hello, sir.
Oh, sorry. I had the stream on.
That's okay. What's up? Welcome to Inside the Game.
I have two questions. Can I only ask one, or?
Fire them off. We'll see.
Go for it.
Okay, my first question is for Marcus.
Yes,
sir. I was wondering what exactly you do at Twitch TV.
Well, I do a number of things at Twitch. I help with outreach and network development, specifically on the esports side, and just pretty much any community that, you know, is wanting to get into streaming. I help out with a lot of those communities to get set up from a technical perspective and sort of like an education perspective. I work with a lot of the business side of things in terms of companies who want to use Twitch to showcase their games. A great example of this is like Paradox Interactive. They're one of the publishers that also works you familiar with the game Magicka? They do War of the Roses. They do the King Arthur games. They do a bunch of other games, but they're one example. So in addition, I also do a lot of tech suggestions, like suggest features that I talk to other streamers, and they're like, man, it'd be really great to have this. Or being a streamer myself, it'd be like, hey, it'd be really great to have this, and help the development team to build those things. So I wear several hats under the Twitch house. I probably didn't cover everything, but that's a good amount. So,
all right. My second question is, like, we've kind of seen people like Morrow, for example, like race picking, and like with how mirror matchups are right now, I was wondering like why you think other players aren't doing that.
Well, for Morrow personally, that's something that he's always done, even since back in the Brood War days. So for him specifically, and he's kind of the example that everybody brings to mind. I mean, I can't really think of too many other players who race pick on a regular basis, but Moro's been doing it forever. His Terran is super solid, and since Zerg is pretty much his main, his understanding of ZVT from the Zerg side of things gives him like a really unique insight into that matchup. So I think it makes his TVZ even better when he picks Terran against Zerg. Like,
but there's still Pain User, like, it's jack of all trades, master of none, right? Still at the end of the day, can a player like that ever truly achieve championship status? Because while I agree, caller, like, it makes total sense to me, right? But doesn't that mean that you have to know how to handle more situations?
Absolutely.
Know how, you know, like, I mean, it just opens up such a wide array of now new shit you got to deal with. It seems like that's probably the biggest reason why.
Mm-hmm. Another way that kind of is the same logic you're on, Wheat, is like you're essentially taking a third of your potential, like, training and practice time with Zerg, because, I mean, assuming that you're playing the matchups, like, equally in practice and stuff, even if you're playing ZVZs, you're still microing the Zerg units that you micro in the other matchups, you're still working on build orders, even though it's against Zerg, like, you're still improving your overall Zerg skill. So when you throw the other race into that element, you're right, like, you're taking on a whole nother, like, subset of strategies and situations that you need to know how to deal with. So I think it's tough, but if you look at somebody like Moro, he has a lot of success doing it. So I don't know. I think if we ever do see a player like that at the very top, it's going to be like a pretty unique thing. Like, I don't think we're going to see race pickers, like, they're not going to be the wave of the future in top tier StarCraft, I don't think. But I wouldn't be surprised if, like, a few players over the course of time make it really far race picking. Like, I just don't think it's that common.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between being good and winning, right, with a random or a race pick. Because I think that, for example, Morrow, right, like, he chooses to pick Terran versus Zerg because he doesn't want to play ZVZ. That makes him, like, a very good player, but I'm not sure that that is going to ever make him a champion. Yeah, I just I feel like you have to dedicate yourself, and I'd love to see a player prove me wrong on that. I don't know. The chat seems to think that it doesn't matter.
It does. Like, it wouldn't matter if the game was way more simplistic, but, like, the races are so unique and there's so many different variables that go into each matchup that, like, taking on a whole nother, like, racial, like, taking on just another race in general in competitive play is so complicated.
What do you think, caller? What do you think?
Well, I think, like, they're kind of trading off, like, one matchup for another one. So I don't think it would be, like, I think it is still a problem, but I don't think it's that big of a deal because they're still kind of practicing three. Some they have to practice the fourth because not all tournaments allow race picking, but, like, yeah.
Do you think we'll ever see a race picking champion?
I think Morrow actually will win something soon because he is, like, quietly, like, one of the best, but
I
don't think so.
He's definitely one of the best foreigners. He always has been. There's no doubt about that. And he's, like, one of the few people that spent time in Korea and trained, which I think, like, that group of foreigners that has been to Korea and trained and, like, put in the time and effort, I think are, like, a cut above the rest of the foreigners for sure.
All right.
Thanks, sir. All right. Take care, Milo. Yep. Bye. All right. Let's take another one. Right here. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome PZ to the show. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, 1 sec. I got to mute my stream.
No problem.
All right. So 2012, we've yet to see a foreigner win a competition. Koreans are 7-7, probably going to be 7-8. Are we ever going to see a foreigner take a tournament in 2012 that is less than three Koreans in it?
I you know what? I won't lie, man. I thought Huck had a chance at winning arena, bro. I really did. I really did.
Really?
I mean, well, dude,
he was almost there.
Make top, you know, he was in the winner bracket final.
Yeah.
That's kind of close. Yeah, I don't think that's a really. I thought that maybe he was going to do it.
Huck can certainly do it. Huck, I think, is the player that will most likely, he'll be the one to do it. I mean, he's training in Korea. He's been putting in more hours with the best players in the world than anyone else. Like, he's got practice partners established over there, you know. I think he's in a unique situation that a lot of other foreigners just are not in, even close. Greg would be, like, a close second.
Really, well, Greg?
And I...
He's pretty shit. He's, like, what, like 12 and, like, 60, 2012?
12 and 60? Has he really played that many games in 2012?
Well, he's 0-4 against Asia, 0-4 against Live, 0-4 in the GSL, like 0-5 in the team leagues.
Maybe.
Something like, he's something large like that.
Naniwa, and
pretty nasty.
Naniwa is definitely a player who could do work, and he's seeded as well for GSL, so Naniwa could do some serious work in tournaments. If he can get his nerves under control and handle some of those issues, I think that, you know, he could definitely be a force to reckon with. And chat saying Stefano, yeah, for sure. Stefano's,
I think,
like,
Stefano's, like, he might as well just be a Korean, dude. Because, I mean, dude, if you guys ever watched him play on his stream, like, he doesn't lose,
but,
man.
But Stefano doesn't
yeah,
go in any
really doesn't ever
actual
lose.
Competition.
What do you mean? Really?
That's why he doesn't want to go to Korea. Because he knows he'll lose.
You really? Yeah, I mean, come on. You really think that's what Stefano thinks?
Yeah.
You really do?
Yep.
Why? What? I mean, like, what grounds do you make that declaration on?
That he won't go to Korea.
I mean, but, like, has he said that he won't go to Korea because he's afraid he'll lose?
I've heard players say they don't want to go to Korea because there's so many more opportunities outside of Korea, including a couple of, you know, players from Slayers who want to get out as well. Like, they know that the bigger opportunities are at the foreign competitions, so I'm not quite sure, PZ, that is necessarily a indicating factor.
All right.
I mean, do you really? Like,
yeah.
I think that 85% of the players would not go to Korea. I mean, I'm sure that getting beat is part of it, but I think the other part is the fact that, like, why play in one tournament when you could play in a potential six?
True. But, like, every tournament he's been in, he hasn't had, like, any competition. And then, like, the IEM one that he gets beat by Code B Terran.
Yeah, well... So, just out of curiosity, like, who do you think? Are you just calling up to shit all over the foreigners, or do you actually think that maybe there's a foreigner who is going to live up? Because I'd love to know who the fuck lives up to your, you know, who are you putting on a pedestal?
No foreigners currently.
All right.
Ouch. You gotta have some hope.
So you just called to ask the question, knowing that you weren't going to have a foreigner to back up anyway, just so that you could deny us any foreigners that came out of our mouth. Like, is that how this game is played?
Yeah.
Dude, honestly, all the people in chat who are knocking on Greg as a potential, like, serious competitor in foreigner tournaments is crazy. Like, he's done tours in Korea. He has so much experience under his belt. He's been around forever. Like, yes, he's in a slump right now. He's not playing the best he's played in his life. But honestly, I would still... He's still definitely a lethal competitor in my eyes. Like, just let Greg get his bearings straight, get back together, and he can perform. There's no doubt about it. And Stefano is definitely a top-tier foreigner competitor as well. And he has shown that he can take out top-tier Koreans in past competitions. Stefano definitely has. So, I don't know. I mean, he can do it. It's just a question of can he become consistent enough to, like, really do it, to win a tournament with a ton of top-tier Koreans.
All right, so PZ, since you have no hope or faith in the foreigners, like, who is the Korean that's going to dominate this year?
I don't really care which Korean it is. It'll always be them, I think.
You don't. So you're just rooting for the Korean race as a whole.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Excellent. All right. Thank you. Don't even understand some people. I don't get it. All right,
he's just like, yeah,
yeah, Right?
Yep.
We got William.
No foreigners.
We got William online. Welcome to Inside the Game.
What's up? Hey, pain user. How's it going, guys?
Hey.
It's going good.
That last guy's... I don't know.
Yeah, like, people are like, why do you even talk to these guys? Because, frankly, like, some people have to understand that, like, sometimes it's like sitting in a psychiatrist seat, right? And getting to, like, really break people down and being like, you know, like, is that what you really think? Like, how does that guy live life is what I want to know. Because I don't understand, like, anyway.
You know it's bad. You know it's bad when the next caller calls in and has a massive brain fart because you just took a dump all over his thought process.
Yeah, it's just like...
I think you guys have a lot of patience. I don't know if you guys remember me. I called in and asked kind of a scatterbrained question about Stefano, and then In Control kind of ripped into me, and you kind of stuck up for me a little bit, but I really didn't have the question together, so I don't know, that last question flabbergasted me as much as I believe it flabbergasted the both of you.
Yeah, but it did a little bit. Especially when it's like, yo, man, who's going to do it? And then he's like, no, 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 and no, I don't think anyone's going to do it. It's like, why the fuck? Why didn't you just say, hey, I don't think any foreigner is gonna be able to win? Like, instead of, you know, but whatever.
Yeah.
William, what's up, man?
Well, this time I wanted to know where the next level of content is going to come from, because we have shows like Inside the Game, State of the Game, these like talk shows that kind of just discuss tournaments that have happened and kind of like drama within the SV2 community. But like, what is the next? And this has kind of been the way it has been for the past year or so. But it's like,
I can sort of kind of jump in and maybe answer that. Let me know if I do or not. But I think that right now it's because there's no, like, the next level of content I feel is directly proportionate to money involved in esports. Like, imagine if, say, an ESPN or a G4 TV jumps in and they're like, hey, you know, we love what you guys are doing with Inside the Game. We love what you guys are doing with State of the Game. Here's $200,000 and some production assistance. Have at it. Like, Wheat would make the sickest fucking show ever, but that's not the case right now. Like, there's not major networks that are interested in promoting these shows yet, but I think in the future, like, that's where it'll come from.
Did you guys see I only caught the part where you guys were talking about IEM, but did you guys see that MLG just raised like $11.3 million more dollars?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
But barring that, you know, Pain User says that Wheat, if you had all this money and assistance and whatever, you would do something amazing. Can you give us kind of like a...
Sure. So let me, from perspective of like, this is content I feel like I would like to see. So let's say, you know, $1 billion was handed to me and I'm like, sweet, I can do whatever I want with this. I'm going to make whatever content I want to make, right? Well, first I'm going to turn it all into gold coins and swim in it for about a week, but then I'll actually use it. So first and foremost, like, I know this might sound like really hokey, but I have always wanted to do, like, and even In Control and I have talked about this, like, the Barbara Walters sit-down interviews. I don't feel anyone has ever really tapped into this before. I mean, shit, man. Like, we are all guilty of asking the same freaking questions in every interview over and over.
So true.
I want to know more, man. I want to know every single video game that X player played when they were growing up and how they actually got on the course of StarCraft. Or maybe, like, you know, it doesn't even have to be StarCraft. I think it's just interesting content. I feel like right now, since people want everything to be so damn accessible, isn't that like the ultimate form of accessibility? It's like really getting to know the players and the people in an intimate way, like, that hasn't been displayed before. I feel like that is a really, really, really untapped potential.
That ties straight into money. Like, you need the money to get the players out there, to pay them, to fly them out. Like, that's all resources right there.
Right. So, I mean, I keep going. If you only, you know, Go ahead.
Well, that sort of thing, like, I remember seeing Gurr. I don't know if you guys, like, I'm sure you guys know
who XDS Gurr, Gurr is.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, of course.
He did that, like, exact, what you, like, a sit-down interview with one of those Korean shows. I think it was NBC, but, like, even that.
Like, he was on it, or he was the interviewer?
No, he was being interviewed by, like, a Korean,
show.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of what I would do, and I have no idea. Like, it's all, like, show matches. Okay, we've got those. Interviews, we've got them. Maybe we can take them to the next level, like you're saying. Team matches, clan wars.
Well, not only... Whatever. Okay, well, to expand on the interview thing, which I think is a great idea for future content, because really, yes... We have tons of interviews, but they're all, like, little snippets here and there, like people catching Idra on the way out of, like, the MLG doors and getting, like, a 3-minute interview. Like, I really like the idea of that, like a sit-down, you know, 10-minute interview by somebody who knows the players, who can help people who don't know the players understand the players, who can sit down with them and talk about things that are relevant to them, not just like, hey, how are you? How'd you get into gaming? Like, somebody who really understands it. And then on top of that, I think another really, really good idea would be have somebody like an analysis caster, I don't care who, sit down with really, really good players and break down like specific games that are monumental and important to them and hear their train of thought and have an analysis caster like walk them through different portions of the game and be like, all right, you know, you just suffered a huge loss in this battle in the mid game. What are you thinking here? How do you bring the game back into your favor? And then just like hear what they have to say about it. I think a lot of people would be really interested in like the competitive player's point of view, and you really don't hear enough of that.
Which is why player casting seems to be very popular.
But like player casting, like, yeah.
Well, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but it's the same concept, right? It's getting a perspective that normally a person would not get.
I feel like Day9's already done that when he brought like Greetorp on, and maybe even you, Pain User, like in the early days of the daily.
Mm-hmm.
I also have another question if you guys feel like this one's done.
Sure, go ahead, real quick.
Pain User, you're on Check 6.
Mm-hmm.
Check 6 just signed Maximus Black. Maximus Black is actually a friend of mine. We both live in Halifax. He's like a really awesome guy, but he's not a high caliber player, but he is extremely popular, and obviously that's why he got signed. Now, mm-hmm. You used to be a very good player, but mm-hmm. I don't think you play very much anymore, and you're more of like a caster, kind of have like a following. You cast for IGN. Basically, the question is, what is the draw for teams to sign players rather than personalities and popular people?
Well, I mean, it's like, I think you need a little bit of both. Like, I think Check 6 has a habit of doing that as well, obviously. I mean, we have Julia, female streamer on our team as well. And then there's like me as well, like you said, you know, like I'm not competing at a top level anymore. I'm more of like a spokesperson or a figurehead for the team. But honestly, like I think they need to recruit in two different facets. They need to recruit project players that are players that they seriously think like, look, I don't care if this guy can't say one word in front of a camera or if he gets tongue-tied in an interview. Like this kid is really good and he has a ton of potential. I think you need to recruit players like that. And then I think also you need, at least in the North American scene, it seems like you need players who can be personalities as well. Like, you know, In Control is a player who brings a lot of value to EG. And he is actually still a top tier competitor. Like, he plays a ton.
I'm sorry, but like, as you guys are having this, I actually decided to flip over because I thought I saw that he was streaming earlier. And this is what I see right now. He's in like a chainmail coif singing something. I have no idea, but there you go.
Who?
What? Maximus Black, man. He's in
he's streaming right now?
Yes. Yes, he's in a chainmail coif, like the kind I would wear in Ultima Online and shit, and he's singing. I feel like I want to turn it up just to hear what he's
see, this is like, he's fucking.
Oh, it's the Pokemon. Thieves, alright, 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 enough. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Pan User. Are you like going and looking now too?
Yeah. The whole chat. I have chat open and it just exploded with like, LOL. Awesome.
Even more amazing is that I got to use the word coif today, which is not very often that happens. So,
this guy said, you're a fucktard. If they're popular, they're going to get signed. Now,
no, not the case at all, because a lot of, I mean, if there's anything we know, like a lot of the super popular personalities, like, don't necessarily put out the best tournament results in the world, at least not consistently over a long period of time. So I think as a team manager and owner, you need to do a little bit of balancing in both fields. Like the players who bring in fans, they obviously appease your sponsors. Sponsors probably want players that have a bigger draw and are more of a personality, more so than the players who just post mad stats. But at the end of the day, if you look at EG's success as an organization and their longevity, they need those players that put up stats and get wins. So it's like, you need both, I feel. And I think that's why teams are recruiting both.
And not every team is necessary. I like, because I feel like people are going to jump down pages and be like, why do you need both? And this is not every team's prerogative by any means, right? But you've got to admit, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense.
Like, in way that the ecosystem is sort of like created itself and how it sustained itself. Having those people is not a terrible thing. It just means that you're committing to, you know, being a team that has this mishmash, hodgepodge.
Mishmash. And also, I think a really, really, really good point is that we're at a stage in gaming right now where we need accessibility into the personalities behind gaming. And a lot of gamers, especially the really good ones, are a tough shell to crack as far as, you know, getting content out of them and making them accessible to the public eye. A lot of them are very reclusive. They don't interview much. And when they do, there's a lot of one-word answers, a lot of really, like, you know, logical yes-no type stuff. But there need to be players that the public can identify with and get an idea for what gamers are all about. And I think that right now we're in a phase where those players are helping grow the sport a lot, and people are really getting interested in players like that. So, I mean, that I think they're very beneficial to the scene in that regard.
All right, William, we got to move on to the next caller, but thank you for your call, dude.
All right, later, dudes.
Take care. Bye.
Later.
All right. I know sometimes we could be long-winded.
Oh, dude, we never touched on players. Like,
what do you mean?
You strayed from your own Maybe. Material guide. What happened to discussing teams and how they interact with each other?
Well,
in tournaments?
I figured that we don't have everyone here, and that's a great question for everyone, because I want to hear.
True.
Because Jeff's always talking about. Yeah,
it.
Let's save it. Let's save
we
it. Save dude. It. Totally. Yeah. By the way, shout out to all the kids out in chat that played Ultima Online, a real man's game. Of course, I say kids, but I know they're all 30 like I am. So, game was the best. Yeah. All right, use space skills for the win. All right, let's take another call here. We're going to take Matt's call. Hello, Matt. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Yo, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Awesome. Yeah, cheers for having us on. Basically, I just had a sort of small point. I wondered what your opinion was. I basically think that people on Reddit need to get a few more friends. I mean, I live in a house with the sort of other StarCraft players, and, you know, we're all amateur, we're all terrible. But when, like, sort of drama blows up and stuff, we just sort of see each other in the kitchen and go, hey, did you see what Orb said? Yeah, bit of an idiot, right? And don't make a big post. And I think that just a lot of drama sort of self-perpetuates because everyone's sort of eager to get their opinions out. And I thought maybe if sort of, you know, people had a few more people just to chat things over with, it wouldn't need to go that far as to, you know, sort of have to put it in front of everyone, really.
Well, so. I mean, you know, one of the things that we have to be careful about is saying Reddit as a community, because I do believe that it is not like the collective who are like, let's fuck a guy over, you know, and I think there's a lot of that that's been going around lately. Just a couple weeks ago, the fighting game community was labeled as a bunch of sexist people because of something that one guy said. And it was truly like not a fair representation. So, you know, while I agree that there's a certain level of sensitivity that people are not aiming for, I don't think that you can ever get rid of that, dude. I just think that it's fostered in a different way.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, you know, obviously this goes further beyond just sort of Reddit and other websites.
Well, yeah, it transcends into how we treat each other as human beings on a daily basis, man.
But,
absolutely.
But really, yeah, like, really though, like you know, what's your question? Like, I mean, I'm sure there's people on Reddit who looked at the whole thing and were like, oh my god, like,
yeah, like I
had
I'm
your
pissed.
Same reaction, you
exactly.
know?
Like, why is this here, you know?
And then there were the people that were like, you know, we got to get to the bottom of this. We're going to start searching orb VODs and replays from 2 years ago and parse them for every bit of text that he wrote. You know, it's like, it's just like different people's reactions to different things. But I don't know how the orb thing went as far as it did. I mean, it just seems like it started out as a small Tinder. And then, like you said, I mean, Reddit just gave it a little bit of kindling and some air, and then it just turned into an absolute firestorm. But
I think people are often vilified for very simple things, and whereas some people, I mean, Sundance is a very good example, because one minute he's, you know, the sort of holy mother himself, you know, someone washes a t-shirt and it's instantly, you know, he sort of sends him out a new one, he's great. Then he announces one thing and bang, you know, as quick as people can publish things to a newspaper, he's immediately the villain. So I think generally, you know, I think, I don't know if it's more of a prevalent issue to Reddit, because I think the way Reddit works with making one single post, which then gets viewed, and then once it breaks that front page, it is perpetuated further. Whereas on Team Liquid, you know, if you want to get into the debate, your comment gets lost in this big sort of, you know, trawl of discussion. So I think Reddit itself kind of self-perpetuates a lot of things like that, which, you know, it's a bit of a problem the way it works, which is great for some things. I mean, sure. You know, I love going there and seeing, you know, someone do something genuinely, you know, sort of odd and like, hey, that's really awesome. Or seeing, you know, state the game, hear the VOD. That's great as well. But sometimes it has its drawbacks.
I agree.
I totally agree. Point, I mean, I think that not only applies to Reddit, like that applies to our community in general as a whole. Like our community has a propensity to get involved in these debacles and take it to, you know, as far as it'll go, you know, like we demand justice, we demand, you know, all these things. But I think, like Wheat was saying before we even got on the show, I think something that everybody should walk away with after all of this stuff is that, like, our community as a whole is super powerful, and we can, in these sort of situations like the orb situation, we can be constructive or we can be destructive. And I think with the orb situation, as a community, it would have been much more mature and, like, bigger of us if we just helped it be a situation where orb just got, like, a stern warning. You know, everybody was disgusted, but hey, it's okay. Everybody makes mistakes. You know, we'll give you a second shot. Let's move on from here. See what happens. If he fucks up again, boom. Then you can go on the crazy witch hunt. It's like, oh, you know, this guy, we gave him another chance, but it's like, you know, I mean, what's the point in going after a guy so viciously, you know, who's trying to do something for the community that's attacking him and provide you a service? I don't know. It just seems like mind-boggling to me how you'd actually spend enough of your time to get this guy fired. Like,
I think as well, something I think about, which kind of makes me feel sad, but is that, you know, the people that often make these posts and vote up and down on, you know, like get orb out or sending emails to all the sponsors, you know, when they've closed the browser, they go back to cooking their, what, you know, whatever. Whereas I now think of Orb having to pack his shit, leave the house, get on a plane. It's just like, whoa, you know, like that's big repercussions. Whereas someone's just like, I showed that internet man I'm never going to see.
Yep. Show that internet man. Matt, thank you for your call.
Cheers. Thank you very much, guys.
Bye-bye. All right, let's take a phone caller. We got area code 480. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
What the fuck? Am I inside the game?
You are.
You are, dude. Right.
You all are. Right. I like that reaction. What the fuck, dude? Billy, man, I'm on, man, Billy. Sorry.
Anyways, I wanted to talk about the state of the... I called in last time. We talked about cash and the competitions and how some teams are, like, bringing on... Like, the last guy who called, like, 3 guys ago, he was like, well, foreigners are dirt and they're trash. And everyone was like, yeah, well, we kind of agree with that somehow. But then you guys are like, no, they have some potential. They have, like, Hook and they have, like, Hydra. Would you say that it's being diminished because teams like EG and Fnatic and SK, are, they just want the best. They go to Korea, they see Hong Jong Wong, they're like, oh, well, he has 300 APM, he's fucking good, give him a shit ton of money. And that's what's encouraging people like Gonzi and Tasia to be like, well, fuck this.
Well, hold on, because as far as I know, Gonzi and Tasia have left on their own accord. No one knows if they've already got a team. Right?
Oh, so, yeah, but we know what they want. We know what they want, right? They
right,
want
right.
Money.
Is this Kevin? Kevin?
What?
Kevin?
What?
Is this Kevin?
No, this is Marcus.
Shut up, Kevin. Hello? Okay, whatever. That's besides
all right, all right. Continue.
So, let's be honest, right? Yes.
Hold on. Everybody wants
every
money.
Team should consider bringing Koreans onto their team if they want
Fuck
to have
yeah,
a winning
that's,
team.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
why
but,
not?
But not supporting the foreign scene either, I think is kind of like 2 steps backwards. So for me, I see this as a win-win situation, right? Because
yes.
The existing teams are,
yeah.
are still fostering this hopeful foreign community. And the Koreans want to be a part of these Western teams. So,
for the reason of money, right?
What,
money
I mean,
and fame. America, it's a big place.
I don't know if that's
no.
all the reasons, but yes. Yes, I do. I think that that has – I think that it's just different. I mean,
no,
like,
I think,
you're 20 years old, man. You get to leave Korea. You get to travel the world. You get to have a fucking audience chant your name.
There
Why wouldn't you want that?
Awesome, dude.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Why are people so, like, butt flattered when people say, well, yeah, Koreans dominating the scene and people like Hydra are heading there? I mean, when was the last time you saw someone say, hey, dude, have you seen what's happening on the American ladder? Holy shit, we need to take this strategy and put it on the Korean ladder. It's always
it doesn't matter.
Like,
do you think the guy that buys
the... it doesn't matter?
Well, I'm going to tell you why, Kevin. If you would listen for a second, do you think the guy that buys a Release the Kraken shirt cares, like, you know, the fact that you know, what's going on in the American Latin? No.
Hold on. What the hell are we even debating right now? Like, what's on the table right now? I'm so lost. Like,
were you listening? I was talking about how do you think cash affects when you buy different players and you say, hey, well, I still think the American ladder is the best when you're obviously buying a shit ton of fucking Koreans.
Well, like, no, I don't think that they're – I don't think that anybody's making the claim that
the
American ladder is the best.
I give
though.
You 3 players right now. I'll give you, like, Keja.
Okay.
I'll give you Borzane, and I'll give you Pain User. Which one do you buy right now?
Asia. Or Thorzane,
yeah, exactly.
Depending
Who's
on what...
Who's going to go and say, I want the fucking American. He's going to do great for my team.
Well,
but, like, if I was, like... I mean, hold on. It totally depends on, like, what the organization needs and, like... You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're in
like,
EG...
What do you think they need? Like, do they need, like, a face or, like, a player? Or
it just depends on what that specific team needs, right? Like, if you're... Say you're a Korean team... Or say you're, like, an American team and you already have 3 phenomenal Korean players on your team or 2 phenomenal Korean players on your team. And then there's, like, a North American player who's up and coming, who has a lot of potential. He's pretty personable. He's talented. Maybe you want to recruit that guy. Have him train with your pre-existing Korean players and make him a better player. Like, it just totally depends on what you need.
Also, let's like, Kevin, I know this is going to be a little difficult for you, but, like, let's take Evil Geniuses, for example. Let's just say that they decided to get rid of every single American English-speaking player. So they got rid of basically everyone. They kept Puma, they kept JYP, and they recruited, like, 8 more Koreans. All right? That'd be a pretty winning team, right? How many of those guys are going to star in Kingston HyperX commercials? How many of those guys are going to be able to cast the Evil Geniuses Masters
Very
cast?
True.
There's a lot more value. Kevin, there's a lot more value to players these days than just their ability to play. And frankly, if you don't see that, I can understand because you're thinking very like black and white, win or lose, but you have to understand that that middle ground is important for running a business.
So are you saying, this is like people saying that, well, Koreans don't know how to run a business. Why don't you,
Kevin, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, is Kingston necessarily going to be able to have an advertisement that would that has a non-English speaking? But no, that's not. It's the cold hard facts. It's like it wouldn't happen. But I mean, this is a hypothetical situation. Do you understand that? Like, these players are being marketed as well. It's not just about their ability to play anymore.
So you're saying the whole game has become not about the ability to play, but about the ability to
I absolutely did not say better? That. You just decided to pull those words out of my mouth, which I did not say. My final word is that it is a fucking business, dude. And there's two ways to run the business. Either you recruit a fucking team that is just going to have a super epic amount of players, and that's how you're going to choose to spend your money. Or you're going to have a balance of the two. You're going to be able to correctly represent your sponsors who are providing endorsements. It's going to allow your players to go out. And there's just like different ways to run a business. But to say that one guy is doing it wrong and another guy is not doing it right, I mean, like, just be ready to congratulate the first guy that's like, I've got an all-Korean team. That's just how it is. Great. He wins everything. That's the team you're going to root for. But I don't understand why.
I never said it was bad, though. I said, why are you saying that? Why are you trying to say that North America is better?
We're not, dude.
All right. I did not say it. Kevin, thank you for your call,
dude. We'll be the first to admit that Koreans trounce us in every competition.
You're going backwards. And, I mean, like, you know what? Again, one troll at a time, man. You know, like, someone learned something from that, and that's what I'm going to take away from it.
I mean, dude, I wasn't even clear on like what we were talking about that whole time, dude. You guys were just
Kevin has called into Live on 3 before, so
his level and Kevin, beat over the head with sandbags, and you're just getting sucked further and further down.
I mean, I don't know. Again, it all comes down to, like, I'm really interested in hearing this guy's. All right, we got Lobber on the line. Lobber, what's up? Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, DJ Wheat. How's it going? First off, I just want to say I love you. You're amazing.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate it.
That's it.
And I'm done.
Oh, what? Really? That's
Thanks for taking my call.
I thought he was, like, waiting for the stream or something. And okay.
I was totally kidding. I didn't know he was going to cut off there.
He actually did cut off.
That's awesome.
All right, let's take another telephone caller. We got area code 312 on the line. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, what's going on, DJ Wheat?
Hey, what's going on?
Not too much. What's going on, paying user? I'm pretty big fan of you guys and just the StarCraft II community in general. I'm just a Silver League player, so I don't really... I'm not really, like, you know, the top tier, you know.
Whatever, dude. You play.
It's all good. You play, man. Yeah, exactly. You obviously enjoy StarCraft because you're listening to the show, and that's good enough for me, man. So what's up?
I don't know. I just wanted to call in and just, you know, just talk for a second. Basically, you know, I've heard a lot of the other callers that have called in, and I think one of the big... I don't know if it's something that's going to hold back as far as, you know, the community going forward, but there's a lot of people that obviously aren't understanding the direction that StarCraft is heading as far as the whole business aspect.
True. Let me ask you this. How many sports fans do you think understand truly the business of sports? I mean, I don't even know that I fucking understand them. I don't know how a team gets their money to fly from this place to this place. Is it all done endorsements? I know that, like, you know, Billy McFootball player over here gets signed by Doritos, and that's a few extra million in his pocket. But, I mean, like, I don't know. So there's a part of me that's like, I don't expect people to know, but then at the same time, I don't understand why people want it to be transparent if they're not willing to actually understand the fundamentals and the logic behind it, you know?
Well, and again, I think what you know, you have to look at is the fan base as well. Obviously, a lot of the StarCraft professionals are younger and younger. Like, you know, Leenok, for instance, you know, he's, what, 15?
16,
something like that, yeah.
I think the community in itself is really young. I think there's a lot of people that are still have a lot to learn. I think that's
because it's next gen shit, dude. Like, gaming is the wave of our generation. It's the younger. This is what we dig on. Like, you know, like this is our form of competitive sports.
Exactly, and I think it's just going to take time. I think, like you guys said, as far as for this to be able to become accepted among the older generation. I think, you know, when you're talking about stuff like ESPN and things like that, I think it's going to take time. I think,
it will take time.
Know, I'd love to see that. I would love to see it. You know, and I think, you know, the online portion is growing. You know, the pay-per-view stuff is starting up, you know, for the, like, the MLG Arena and things like that. But I think it's just, it was like this back when I was playing, like, Call of Duty, for instance, in 2004. When I was 19, I was playing, you know, 8 hours a day and just putting all my time and effort into that, and I never really had a clue how far, you know, the gaming and how far this was going
to
come.
Well, I mean, we still got certainly a long ways to go, and I appreciate your call, man.
All right, thanks.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. All right. Sometimes you just gotta move it along, man.
I was waiting for the, like, I was waiting for the
so, like, so, like, pain is, I think, like,
esports,
like, and they just don't get it, man.
Fucking kids. Stupid ass kids.
They just don't get it.
Dude, the best part, it's the, like, the best.
I'm like, I thought that we got it. I was like, no.
The best part, dude, the best part was just like, I just wanted to talk to you guys for a little bit.
Yeah, for a moment.
I was like, about what,
yo,
dude?
Man,
like,
let's just chill on Skype. No, I mean, in all fairness, we're just playing around, brother. We're just playing. You could been a totally, I hope you were at a 7, but if you weren't, my apologies. My apologies. I know that sometimes calling in does that.
I don't always call inside the game, but when I do, I'm at a 10.5.
Yeah, now we're the problem in esports. All right, well, I'll just like stop taking callers then, for fuck's sakes. Can't make everyone happy, I guess. So we'll just bring the last caller of the night on then. Of course, the one, the only, it's Goat Les. Hello.
Oh, yeah, g'day, fellas.
G'day.
Yes!
Yeah.
What's up,
man? How are we?
Hey, Goat Lust, was that rude, what we just did?
Talking about that last caller.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, if you're going to call in, then, you know, you expect people to maybe make a couple of comments. I mean, you weren't too rude, so.
You're just like a little rude, man. It's like you can't even play around anymore. It's like okay for the guys to call in and troll us and fuck with us, but it's not okay for us to fuck with them. Like, come on.
I mean, when you call in, you're obviously accepting that you're going to at least be on the air in front of a certain amount of people, and, you know, people might make a couple of comments.
They might. I love that last caller, by the way.
And yeah, that was solid.
I hope that he calls back again. My Silver League brethren, like, damn it, he's not afraid to admit that, and
oh, fuck yeah,
he's down with the business. So anyway, what's up, Goat Lust? I wish that we had more hosts than Pain User, a black screen, and a cat pushing a watermelon out of the lake, but yeah, we are here.
We're here in spirit, full on.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's up, man?
Yeah, not a lot. So
actually, my question was for Greg, but since he's not here,
so thanks, well, guys.
Actually, what? I did have a question for everyone, but I thought I might save it for next week. Actually, I've got a question just for you two.
Okay.
All right.
So, you know, I had a good time watching that IEM. It was pretty fucking good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
And, you know, the one thing I noticed again was those League of Legends numbers are just through the fucking stratosphere.
Yeah, they are.
So, so do you guys see this as a problem for StarCraft at all? Like, if a sponsor is going, oh, I'm looking to invest in, like, esports and people watching video games, why, when they look at the different games out there, do you think they're going to look at StarCraft and see, you know, 30,000 viewers and think, oh, these guys are more engaged because they're doing all this shit on Reddit, they're actually, like, paying for a pay-per-view for, like, an MLG, they're obviously a more mature crowd, they're more switched on?
I've got a question for you, Goatless. What do you think between the two games, StarCraft II as a competitive esport, a game that's straight up designed from the ground up to be like a one-on-one competitive esport, and then you've got League of Legends, which was like a free-to-play, you know, fantasy or MOBA game that just became huge and has a gigantic community. But I feel like as far as accessing the mainstream and getting the mainstream interested and involved in the stories behind the players, like, do you really think League of Legends can live up to, like, the epicness that we can create with the StarCraft community? Do you think that they'll breach into the mainstream further than StarCraft
can?
That's
what they gotta do.
But right now, I feel like their numbers are skyrocketing because their community is just flat out larger.
Yeah. I mean,
don't,
that's
by the way, if you ever say that to a fan, they will kill you for it. They don't like to hear that, you know, and I used to make that same argument about World of Warcraft, that, you know what, it's not about the game.
It's not an esport,
it's not about the popularity. It happens to be about the size of it. And that, and I mean, look where World of Warcraft esports is at right now. It's just hanging on by a thread. Now, please do not, as I know many of you dickheads will, immediately be like, oh my god, we just said that, you know, League of Legends is fucking bullshit. It's like, no. But there's no doubt that their player base is large. I think what really the question is, Goatless, is how much larger can they grow it from the already amazing numbers that they're pulling in?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Certainly, there's not this horde of people who are, you know, only a Silver League play once a week, or people even like me who, you know, I haven't played my fucking placement matches for this season, or, you know, I only played a few games last season. I don't think League of Legends gets those sort of people in. And that's the issue for the growth, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if I can use kind of a weird example from my life, if you take my father, for instance, when I was younger and playing all the time, like, his only interest in gaming and competitive gaming is through me. And he's a fairly intelligent guy. He's a sharp guy. And when I try and explain, you know, StarCraft 2 to him, he sort of gets it. He's like, all right, there's these little things scurrying around on this side. They're green and fucking slimy. And then there's these, like, advanced Protoss guys, and they're going head-to-head, and they're killing each other. And, oh, this guy's the victor. Like, my dad gets it. When I try and explain, say, World of Warcraft or League of Legends or games like that, it's just like a hodgepodge of colors and spells. He has no idea what the hell's going on. Like, and for me, that right there, I think, is kind of what might happen with the mainstream audience if you just, like, start throwing up, like, games like super fantasy-oriented games that people just don't understand. It's difficult to get a mainstream audience interested in that if they can't figure out what's going on at a baseline level.
I mean, it's already difficult to get a mainstream audience on anything. It doesn't matter. I mean, you know, to me, I've always said one of the focused games for getting gaming into the mainstream should be Street Fighter. Because, you know what? Any monkey can look at the screen and go, ooh, 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 and know that player X is beating on player Y and someone wins, and there it is. Like, it is the easiest thing to understand. you know, you look at a game like StarCraft, it's pretty difficult. Maybe a game like Quake, okay, well, they're shooting one another. They're getting points for it. But at the end of the day, that might be the most important thing for these types of games to go to the mainstream. So, yes, the more complex the game is, the more difficult it is to be able to break into that mainstream. So I think that you almost have to gauge these types of things based off of the success that they've had over time and not necessarily one or two events. Take a look at StarCraft, how they started out, how they grew with the BarCraft scene. The same thing can be said about the fighting game community, where they've been growing this organic grassroots thing forever. You know, now it's starting to break through. So I think that it's still too early. You know, the Spectator mod for League of Legends literally just came out. Still some, you know, issues with it. But, you know, will it slow down when Dota comes out? I don't know. I wish I could predict the future, but.
I mean, I don't know at this point if Dota and Han are going to be able to take a chunk back of the market that LoL's capitalized on. I mean, I don't know.
It'll not be easy, but, you know.
You know, I mean.
Let's not get into this argument now. That could be another 15 minutes. So, go, Lust, sir. Thank you as always.
All right. Yep. Thanks as always, gents.
Take care, man.
Yeah, take it easy, man.
Peace out. All right. It's time to wrap up. EG Masters Cup's coming up next.
There it is.
And is this true? Naniwa and Stefano putting up 5K to battle each other? I like it.
Wait, really? They're each going to put up 5K?
Yeah, apparently. It's what the Newswire is talking about.
That's awesome.
I honestly, opinions to be fair, like, I think a lot of people might be surprised. I can't wait to see what happens when Dota 2 gets released, you know? Like, I just want to see what effect it has. How it will play into the grand scheme of things. Because everyone thinks they know, but I don't think anyone truly knows.
Yeah. Have any major, like, organizations picked up a ton? Like, have a bunch of the major organizations picked up LoL teams yet? You know? Fnatic, Na'Vi, all those MOBA organizations that support MOBA teams. Do they have League of Legends teams as well? Because it seems like a lot of the big competitive gaming organizations are more focused on having teams for either Han or Dota 2. And right now, Dota 2, because Han was pretty much dropped by all the teams that supported it. So it seems like Dota 2 right now has the support of the competitive community.
Well, you can't argue with the numbers of Dota itself, right? That you, if you just make the apples to apples comparison, like, there are X million people that play Dota right now. So X million people will play Dota 2, right? I mean, like, hypothetical. What'll
different
be interesting,
platform,
though, is how many users from those other games will move over to supplement the already large audience. So, I don't think it's like the weather, dude. No one can truly predict what is going to happen. All we can do is wait and see what happens. But I'm not going to be one of those.
I don't know, bro. I'm pretty sure meteorologists have it down to a fine-tuned science.
Oh, yeah, you think?
I'm pretty sure they do. I don't know if they're surprised too much on the weather front.
All right.
But I'll roll with it.
All right. I live in Nebraska where, like, one moment it's fucking snowing, and the next moment the sun's out. So I don't know. Maybe that was a bad comparison. Should we just say the future predicting?
No, it wasn't, dude. I'm just being a dick. It was fine.
All right. All right. You dick.
Fuck it.
But anyway, it's still, I know that In Control didn't really like to talk about the whole MOBA thing, but I find it interesting, and it's something that I can't ignore, you know?
Yeah, like, dude, I play MOBAs too. Like,
I take a bigger interest in sort of what's going on just in esports in general, and I find it fascinating, dude. So anyway, I'm going to Red Bull Land this week, and then I'll be at MLG Columbus next week. But everything is still going on. We got Live on 3 tomorrow. I understand we're going to have the winners of Counter-Strike 1.6 and the winners of League of Legends, Moscow 5, or at least a representative from both of the teams, ESC and Moscow 5, which should be cool.
Awesome.
I'm not sure that we've had a – well, that's not true. We've had a couple of little guys on the show, but any final thoughts, dude?
I don't know, man. Not really. I think we covered a lot this show.
We did. It was good. See, isn't that every time that it ends up being like a one-on-one show, there we go. It turns out pretty decent, so. How do I always pick the same guys, dude? I swear.
I don't know if we could have got off the in control to raid on the orb subject.
Yeah.
I think we would have all been in for a serious shellacking.
What? Diablo 3 crushing? I don't think Diablo... I think Diablo 3 will have a very strong streaming background. Like, I feel like a lot of people stream Diablo 3 and it'll be popular in that way.
Did anyone play D3 PvP at BlizzCon?
Well, you know that it's not even being... It's not even in the retail. They've pulled
the beta.
No, they pulled it.
Beta. Oh, they pulled it?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I mean, I played the PvP when they had it in beta form at BlizzCon, and it was not good. I don't think it's going to be an eSport.
Hey, like, you know what I played that was really good, dude? That Smashcraft.
What?
It's a BNet custom game. It's called Smashcraft. Have you ever played Bloodline Champions?
Yes.
It's like Bloodline Champions, except it uses StarCraft 2 units and like has a pretty robust. We played it last night on Kings of 10. I won't lie, it's pretty sweet.
That's dope.
Yeah, definitely. We'll check it out. So, all right, guys. Well, thanks for joining us. Pain User, final shout-outs?
Yep. Big shout-outs to my team, Check 6, and our sponsors, TT Esports, PureTrack, ES Reality, Pure Voice, Gamers Uniform. Please follow me on Twitter. I'm at Pain User. And keep posted for the IPL 4 in Vegas at the Cosmo. All details have been released about that on Team Liquid, and there's a lot more coming in the next couple weeks. It's going to be freaking awesome. I will be casting there with a bunch of people, but it's going to be sweet. And obviously, me and HD aren't working on the Daily Show anymore with IGN, so we're not like totally exclusive with them anymore. So I'm probably going to be casting around doing other events and stuff, but I'm still working with IPL, and I'm going to be doing IPL 4 and hopefully major events in the future. So just wanted to clear that up. I've had a lot of people asking me on my Twitter, all kinds of other stuff. What's going on? What's going on with IGN? We're not working on the Daily Show right now. There's no, you know, need for there to be two different sets of casters right now. And I'm going to be, you know, doing whatever opportunities present themselves and also continuing to work with them in the future on major events. So just wanted to squash that and get it all out in the open and let people know what we're doing. And people should definitely stay posted for that. It's going to be awesome.
Excellent. Thank you very much for the update. I just want to say thank you to our sponsor, SteelSeries 6 Pool Gaming. Coming up next is the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup. If you are going to be down in Orlando this weekend, stop by Full Sail and say hello. I'd love to meet you. Otherwise, hopefully you're coming to MLG Columbus. And I personally am looking forward to this event, not only to cast on the stage of MLG once again, but I want to see 1 year later. You know, we were in Columbus last year. How much will this have grown? Columbus was, always a big focus for them. They always mm-hmm. seem to get a good turnout. So what will the numbers be like? I kind of can't wait to actually see that. Anyway, we've got Live on 3 tomorrow. We've got winners from Counter-Strike 1.6 and League of Legends on it for an interview. And that'll be at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't forget, we in the U.S., because we're dumb, had daylight savings. And so, yeah.
And
so, so some people were like, what, the show started, it was like it was only an hour today. It's like, no, because no one informed you guys, unfortunately, that we are idiots that move our clocks around. So that being said, thanks for joining us. Coming up next, the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup. We'll see you next time. Peace. Out of here.